this is indeed UU Todd Phillips, the golden voice of the Great Southwest, and you are listening to Loafer's Glory, the Hobo Jungle of the Mind.
Anybody can die, evidently. Few go happily, irradiating joy, knowledge, love. Many need oblivion, painkillers, quickest respite, sweet time unafflicted, various world, X equals your zenith.
Well, yes, here we are again. Me, Utah Phillips, a.k.a. Golden Voice of the Great Southwest. That's Steve Baker. We're having a harried morning here. Things are running a little bit late, but this is community radio, you know, which is very often a synonym for chaos. But he's running the machines and twisting the knobs. I'm not any good at that, you know. I'm the guy who thinks that CD-ROM is the Prime Minister of India. That was the Borisdorf's doing that wonderful theme music. The poem you just heard is Robert Pinsky's. That poem is 26 words long, exactly 26 words, and they're in alphabetical order. Did you get that? Let's listen to it again.
Anybody can die, evidently. Few go happily, irradiating joy, knowledge, love. Many need oblivion, painkillers, quickest respite, sweet time unafflicted, various world, X equals your zenith.
Yeah, that's 26 words in alphabetical order now. That's from the People's Poetry Gathering that I participated in with the Rose Tattoo folks here last year. Well, we are in the studios of radio station KVMR, and yes, we are on the air in spite of rolling blackouts. And in California here, a rolling blackout is a synonym for a senior moment. But we are on the air by the grace of generators. You can maybe perhaps hear the treadmills running outside with volunteers on them. Here, let's give you a little... Stop that, Brian. That was a whip. Yeah, these are volunteers, man. Well, the treadmill is creaking along, and we keep on going. Yes, California, the rolling blackout, where our motto is now, where are you going to go when the dynamo don't go no more? You're trying to panhandle a candle like a vandal and inveigle a bagel. Well, let's see what's been going on here. This will be a highly miscellaneous sort of program. I have been doing some programs lately that were very heavily, I believe, political. I've enjoyed doing them, and I always enjoy doing that. But hold no great high political expectation for this particular program. My brother David came up and visited from he lives down in Vacaville, and he's a year older than I am. I'll be turning 66 day after tomorrow on Tuesday, and he's 67. Now, retired now from Travis Air Force Base, as a matter of fact. But it was good to sit down with probably my oldest friend in the world, my brother Dave. And we share a collective past. We have a shared history. And there's so few that I can talk with that about. And the same with him. I guess that's one of the reasons he came up. We could hearken back to the old neighborhood in Cleveland, Ohio. Neither one of us quite remembers the one we were born in. But when my mother remarried Sid Cohen, our stepfather, moved us into the old Jewish neighborhood there on Orville Avenue off of 105th, the old Yiddish-speaking Ashkenaz neighborhood. And it was full of juice and full of life, and we could talk about people we remember from there, from Mickey Katz and Eddie Levin and the kids we used to run with through the alleys. We grew up with alleys. For a kid to grow up leading any kind of civilized life, you got to have alleys to run through and garages to hide in. Remember old Mr. Goldberg? Mr. Goldberg used to go every noon down to Schweibacher's Delicatessen next to Levin's fruit store. Go in every noon and sit down and order a bottle of matzo ball soup. He loved matzo ball soup. Every day for 40 years. One day, Mr. Goldberg sat down at Schweibacher's Delicatessen. The matzo soup was brought to him by a waiter who had been there as long as Mr. Goldberg had been going there, at least 40 years. Mr. Goldberg sat and stared at the matzo ball soup. The waiter walked over. "What's the matter, Mr. Goldberg?" No response. "Is it the soup too hot? I'll blow on it." Still no response. "Is it too cold? I'll hotten it." Nothing. "For God's sake, Goldberg, tell me what's wrong with the matzo ball soup." Goldberg looked up and said, "Taste it." The waiter bent over, said, "Where's the spoon?" "Aha!" Goldberg. Let's listen to something from the past here. Let's listen to Simon and Garfunkel's The Sound of Silence in Hebrew.
Shuti shuti la
Well, that was, of course, that was Bridge Over Troubled Waters. I never learned to speak Hebrew very, very well, and I got it wrong. Besides which, the back cover notes, this is a record from Israel by the Pavarim. It's an old LP called by the Pavarim, and the notes on the back are backwards. So, of course, I got it backwards. Bridge Over Troubled Waters. The old neighborhood, you know, when my mother remarried Sid, my stepfather, he courted her off of the runway there at the top of Higbee Brothers department store. My mother was a fashion model. She had two small children, was a single mother there in, 1939 or so. And what was available for you to do at that time? So she worked as a fashion model. She modeled hats, the Lily Deschaux hats, the Garbo hats, the beautiful florid kinds of hats. Of course, that was the time when people wore hats. That's why I'm a hat junkie, why I collect them. I've got about 50 hats around the house. See, when I was a kid, there was a different hat for every job. A mechanic wore a kind of a little boat-shaped hat with the name of the garage on the side. A stonemason wore a square paper hat. There was a painter wore a white painter's hat. And of course, the women's hats were beautiful with feathers and with vegetables and fruits on the top of them. You know, they were beautiful. They were works of art, and my mother loved hats as well. I was thinking about that and my mother's hats, looking at some of the old photographs of her publicity stills when she was a model, trying to see if I knew any hat songs. Well, there's only one. It's a rare Woody Guthrie that I only discovered lately on the end of a tape somebody sent me, which he stuck in the middle of Ladies' Auxiliary. Of course, Ladies' Auxiliary was a song that Woody was asked to write for the Ladies' Auxiliary of a labor union. And they wouldn't use it. They turned it back because they said it didn't use Say Ladies' Auxiliary enough times. So that's when he sat down and wrote this Ladies' Auxiliary. But in the middle of it, he stuck a song about hats. Woody Guthrie.
Ladies' Auxiliary is a good auxiliary. It's the best auxiliary that you ever did see. If you need an auxiliary, see the Ladies' Auxiliary. It's the Ladies' Auxiliary. I ain't a-knocking on our women, I love them as good as you. But women's mighty funny, and we all know that is true. Riding in the subway or walking along the street, these things our women wear for hats have really got me beat. Some wind around like serpents, some look like ice cream cones. Some like flower gardens that blossom on their domes. Some like grocery baskets. Some look like rat traps. And you can't tell if they're going out or just a coming back. One may have a feather 10 feet in the sky, 15 yards of fishing net that falls down in her eyes. We love our women tenderly. Weakness, we all got that. But you can sell a woman anything if you tell her it's a hat. Oh, the ladies' auxiliary is a good auxiliary. The best auxiliary that you ever did see. If you need an auxiliary, see the ladies' auxiliary. It's the ladies' auxiliary.
That old Woody Guthrie. Well, that's a happy Mother's Day. I forgot to tell you that this is, at least where I am right now, in this average annual ambient reality, Mother's Day. Thanks, Mom. Thanks for the hats. Well, and now here I am many, many years later in Nevada City, California, doing the cardiac rehab exercise class 3 days a week because of serious heart disease. How did I get here? What brought me where I am today? Well, I'll tell you what it was. It was souvlaki in New York City. It was buffalo chicken wings at the Anchor Bar in Buffalo, or beef on Weck. It was Philadelphia cheesesteaks at Pat's at 3 o'clock in the morning. It was Vienna Red Hots after paying out of the Earl of Old Town's pub at God knows when. I felt that I had to, in order to arrive at a new place, sample the street food. And that's what got me where I am today. I am now find myself marooned in a town, Nevada City, California, where there is no street food. There's a worthy enterprise. That's our single cultural lack in Nevada City. We have no street food. Let's, those of you who live here, let's get to work on that. Try to imagine what kind of street food Nevada City would have or deserve. Street food. I remember I was traveling in London, singing down in the tube, I guess they call it, the underground, in the subway. I was busking, and I was in a corner where the acoustics were pretty good because of the tile on the walls. That's where I met Martin Carthy, the great guitarist from Britain. And I fell in with a bunch of people equally impoverished. They were working on a construction gang. They were building all kinds of high-rise a tourist accommodations, and there was a premium, there was a tax rebate to the builders for every unit they got completed, and the workers were on strike. The bunch I fell in with were Glaswegians from Glasgow, and they had come south looking for work, you know, and they were the ones that were out on strike. And they took me to the place they were living. It was a little cold water flat with just a one-burner stove in it. What they were living on, there was no strike relief. What they were living on was French fry sandwiches, cooking up French fries in a pan full of oil and then putting them between two slices of bread. Well, every now and then I'd get a gig over in Catford, you know, playing at some smoky club, and I'd bring home some money, and they'd say, okay, we're going to go out to dinner. They'd take me to these Indian restaurants. And when they sat down with those menus, they knew what a tandoori oven was. They knew what all those dishes were. And I said, Bert McGann was the leader. I said, Bert, you do this because you're impoverished construction workers. You know, you're out of work, and there's a whole lot of food, and it's pretty cheap. He said, oh, no. We learned that from our grandfathers, and they learned it from their grandfathers. It was the levies, the English levies on the Scots, sending troops over to India to fight for crown and for company. We've always known this food. Let's cast our minds back, not that far up this way a little bit, yeah, right in there, and listen to a song from those times. The Road to Mandalay was always the great imperial song, and it was done with a concert baritone. It was very stentorian and boring. Well, Peter Bellamy took that poem, which was by Rudyard Kipling, and put a new tune to it. Now here's John Roberts and Tony Barrand restoring The Road to Mandalay to what it started out as, and that's one of Kipling's Barracks Room ballads, The Road to Mandalay.
On the road to Mandalay, where the flying fishes play and the dawn comes up like thunder out of China across the bay, one of the great choruses, geographically impossible. Go and look up where Mandalay is. It's nowhere near a bay you can see China from. Huh. by the old Moulmein pagoda, looking lazy at the sea. There sits a little Burma girl, and I know she thinks of me. For the wind is in the palm trees, and the temple bells do say, come you back, you British soldier, come you back to Mandalay, come you back to Mandalay, where the old flotilla lay. Can't you hear their paddles chunking from Rangoon to Mandalay, on the road to Mandalay, where the flying fishes play, and the dawn comes up like thunder out of China across the bay. Her petticoat was yellow, and her little cap was green, and her name was Supi Yorlap, just the same as Thibor's queen. And I seed her first a smoking on a whacking a white cheroot, and wasting Christian kisses on an heathen idol's foot. Blooming idol made of mud, what they called the great gourd bud. Plucky lot, she cared for idols when I kissed her where she stood, on the road to Mandalay, where the flying fishes play, and the dawn comes up like thunder out of China across the bay. When the mist was on the rice fields and the sun was dropping slow, she'd get her little banjo and we'd sing Kulalolo, with her arm upon me shoulder and her cheek again me cheek. We used to watch the steamers and the Hathis piling teak, elephants a piling teak in that sludgy squdgy creek, where the silence hung so heavy you was half afraid to speak. On the road to Mandalay, where the flying fishes play, and the dawn comes up like thunder out of China across the bay. Ah, but that's all shoved behind me, long ago and far away, for there aren't no buses running from the bank to Mandalay. And I'm learning here in London what the 10-year soldier tells. When you've heard the Easter calling, you won't never heed naught else. No, you won't heed nothing else. Ah, but them spicy garlic smells, and the sunshine, and the palm trees, and them tinkly temple bells. On the road to Mandalay, where the flying fishes play, and the dawn comes up like thunder out of China across the bay. I am sick of wasting leather on these gritty paving stones, and the blasted English drizzle awakes the fever in me bones. Though I walks with 50 housemaids out of Chelsea to the Strand, where they talks a lot of loving, but what do they understand? Beefy face and grubby hands, Lord, what do they understand? I've a sweeter, neater maiden in a cleaner, greener land. On the road to Mandalay, where the flying fishes play, and the dawn comes up like thunder out of China across the bay. Ship me somewheres east of Suez, where the best is like the worst, where there aren't no Ten Commandments and a man can raise a thirst. For the temple bells are calling, and it's there that I would be, by the old Moulmein pagoda, looking lazy at the sea. On the road to Mandalay, where the old flotilla lay, with our sick beneath the awnings when we went to Mandalay. On the road to
to Mandalay, where the flying fishes play, and the dawn comes up like thunder at a China across the bay.
Oh, isn't that a piece of work? That's the way it would have been sung in those times. John Roberts and Tony Brand, very dear old friends. Well, the sun never set on the British Empire, they said. Of course, that was imperialism when you go and take over somebody else's territory. The neo-imperialism, now you don't have to do that. All you got to do is own the financial system, own the banking system, own the marketing system, don't you? Huh? That's what the World Trade Organization is all about, the WTO, neo-imperialism. You don't have to occupy the land. Just control where the money goes. You can bankrupt anybody anytime that you want to, and you can rest assured that this new world order, this World Trade Organization, this emerging global market is damn well going to be Eurocentric. You can see that. You can smell that, can't you? There was a lot of great music that was created up there in Seattle during the WTO demonstrations in 1999. I got a record sent down to me by Jim Cook with the Letter Carriers Union up there in Portland, Oregon. He also sings with a bunch of rowdies who get together and sing called General Strike, and they finally made their own recording. And he sent this to him. And the song that you're going to hear was first made and first sung at the WTO demonstrations in 1999. We'll precede that with Stupid's Pledge. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the multinational corporations and to the profit for which they stand, one interlocking directorate under no government, indivisible with monopoly and cheap labor for all.
This old job once gave me comfort, this old job once gave me hope. This old job offered advancement if with trials we could cope. This old job once paid my health care, this old job once paid my bills. Now I barely make a living and my hopes are not fulfilled.
Ain't gonna keep this job no longer, ain't gonna keep this job no more. Ain't got time to do the grunt work, ain't got time to stay so poor. Ain't got time to beg for pennies or to kiss the boss's ass. Ain't gonna keep this job no longer, I'm gonna join the union at last.
This old job is getting nasty, this old job is getting old. This old job has seen some cutbacks while the bosses hoard the gold. This old job has no seniority, this old job is a dead-end street. Gonna find me a union job, 'cause my children want to eat.
Ain't gonna keep this job no longer, ain't gonna keep this job no more. Ain't got time to do the grunt work, ain't got time to stay so poor. Ain't got time to beg for pennies or to kiss the boss's ass. Ain't gonna keep this job no longer, I'm gonna join the union at last.
This old job has no meaning, this old job has no respect. This old job overworks me and requires no intellect. This old job on me is draining and it sucks away my life. I hear fellow workers calling, get a union card tonight.
Ain't gonna keep this job no longer, ain't gonna keep this job no more. Ain't got time to do the grunt work, ain't got time to stay so poor. Ain't got time to beg for pennies or to kiss the boss's ass. Ain't gonna keep this job no longer, I'm gonna join the union at last.
This old job has rotten bosses who don't give a damn for me. They're blinded by ignorance and driven by greed. But my working here is over, ain't gonna take their crap no more. Gonna find me a union job when I walk out through that door.
Ain't gonna keep this job no longer, ain't gonna keep this job no more. Ain't got time to do the grunt work, ain't got time to stay so poor. Ain't got time to beg for pennies or to kiss the
boss's ass. Ain't gonna keep this job no longer. I'm gonna join the union at last.
Gonna join the union,
join the union,
join the union.
Gonna join the union at last.
Well, that was Kenny Hall there, Blind Kenny Hall in Fresno, playing the Hilo March, which is sounds suspiciously like You Are My Sunshine, if I'm not mistaken. But then, folk music is folk music, and it's owned by everybody. This old job, the one you just heard now, those of you who are of advancing years will recall that that's a parody of This Old House by Stuart Hamblin. Stuart Hamblin, who was the mayor of Hollywood for 12 years. This will appear on the trivia quiz at the end of this program. Dumb jobs. The worst jobs I can imagine, the worst jobs I've ever seen, were working as a cocktail waitress in an after-hours bar in Chicago called the Earl of Old Town. Had an after-hours license, so all the drunk salesmen in town for a convention would go there when all the other bars were closed. And then, of course, there's a late-night cab driver, or being a cab driver on New Year's Eve or St. Patrick's Day, for crying out loud. Now, I've never done either one of those jobs, but I've been there, and I've watched it. When I played the Earl of Old Town, and those drunks were in the crowd, and you're trying to get them to sing, I would sing a couple of these old labor songs, old Joe Hill songs, you see, and then say, when it this is a hard job that these women have got. It's one of the hardest and dumbest jobs that there is. I'd appreciate it if you'd remember that when it came time to pay up. I could boost the tips 40% in that place, and the waitresses were always glad to see me come back. And then in exchange for that, they would keep the noisy tables quiet, you see. It's called job action, and it seems to work. The late-night cab driver, well, I was in Serino's bar here in town some time ago. It was New Year's Eve, and I was just out cruising around the town trying to watch the fun. I went into Serino's, and a patron there had fallen off of the bar stool, obviously deep in his cups. Well, of course, the first thing he did was take out his wallet, and I handed it to the bartender. That's the way you do that, you know, so there's never any question. It's the bartender's the one who's going to take out the driver's license and then call up the cab and then tell you what the address is. So he called the cab, and the cab came, and I got the fella up, and he fell down by the door. I got him outside as the cab pulled up. When he fell down getting into the cab, we drove to the address. He fell down getting out of the cab, and then on the porch, I picked him up, I rung the bell, and a pleasant-looking lady came to the door, and I said, "Excuse me, ma'am, but is this your husband?" And she said, "Why, yes. Where are his crutches?" Well, now, there's Jason Eklund and Kel Robertson again out there on some dusty highway with that little handheld tape recorder, good on the freight trains, pen good songs every now and then. This is an authentic field recording, so you got to listen to it close. Jason Eklund and Kel Robertson, The Cabbie Song.
Well, you know I don't get drunk. Here's the reason why I'll hand you down. That's why I keep spare floor mats in the trunk. I walked her from the back seat to her front door. Then I hit the street to pick up one more. This rich guy, he thought his 50, it was a 5. After he burned himself on a Cuban cigar. Now an honest man like me must stay alive. Tried to give it back and he did me. No cabbies don't get drunk on New Year's Eve. They're too busy driving other trucks around. Doug, you gotta make the hay while the moon shines. And tomorrow of Joe is what I need to keep me on the go. 'Cause I got the whole next year to get drunk with Denver Joe. Tonight it's all about the fast dough. Here's 7 in the morning, here comes the sun.
Oh, Jason Eklund and Kel Robertson, yeah, that's wonderful. That was recorded. This whole tape they sent me was recorded at on a little machine at a rest stop somewhere along the highway. I love it when people send things like that to me. Well, I have here the obituary for Jimmy Davis. Do you know that name? Ramblin' Jimmy Davis. Ramblin' Jimmy Davis was the governor of Louisiana twice during the 1940s. Jimmy Davis, one of 11 kids born to sharecroppers. He served two terms as governor. Dirt poor sharecroppers. He used to campaign for governor riding a white horse named Sunshine. He'd ride it up the Capitol steps down there in Shreveport, waving a white Stetson and sing about his legislative agenda. About the same time, he was teaching, honest to God, he was teaching yodeling at a women's college in Shreveport. Well, he passed away at the age of 101 just lately. At his eulogy, another former governor of the state, Edwin Edwards, said, "He served 2 years as governor and was never indicted. That's a genuine achievement." But Ramblin' Jimmy Davis was particularly known as the man who wrote, "You Are My Sunshine." My friend Glenn Howard scared up the original recording of that song, and I think you're going to find this interesting.
The other night, dear, as I lay sleeping, I dreamed I held you in my arms. But when I woke, dear, I was was mistaken. So I hung my head and cried. You are my sunshine, my only sunshine. You make me happy when skies are gray. You'll never know, dear, how much I love you. Please don't take my sunshine away. You really loved me, that nothing else could come between. But now you've left me and love another. You have shattered all my dreams. You are my sunshine, my only sunshine. You make me happy when skies are gray. You'll never know, dear, how much I love you. Please don't take my sunshine away.
Ramblin' Jimmy Davis. He also wrote Makes No Difference Now. A lot of great songs. Ramblin' Jimmy Davis, he was a kind of a segregationist, but you know, when the legislator tried to pass a right to work law, he opposed it and he vetoed it. And he was a conservative guy. Why? Because he was also a member of the Musicians Union, and James Petrillo, the great militant leader of the AFM, told him that if he signed that legislation, he would never work in a studio again as long as he lived. Ha ha! Direct action gets the goods, folks. Ah, you are my sunshine. That was my older boy's favorite song, Duncan. I always sang him to sleep with that. I remember one time he was coming home from school. We lived out there around Mighton, Utah, there on the edge of the Uinta Basin. He had to walk some distance to get home from school. And he didn't walk through a 12-foot snowdrift, no. It was just a pleasant walk. And one day he was almost kidnapped by a band of marauding child taxidermists who frequent those parts. Child taxidermy used to be a folk art in Utah. The Mormon settlements, the Mormon communities got so big, they had so many children, there was nothing to do, you know, in Utah at all except breed. And the Mormon families get up to sometimes 100 kids. And finally you get that one you couldn't afford to feed, and you call in the child stuffer, was the generic term, child taxidermist, and he had an honored position in any Mormon settlement, and he would fill the kid full of bunny stuffing and little glass eyes, and in later days, a little pull ring. You'd pull in a little thing inside and go, "Hi, Mom, hi, Dad." That was it. The rest of the time, it was in the corner with a sheet over it, and you'd take him out on holidays and decorate him or play ring toss like a family fun center. Sometimes take him out on the lawn and varnish him so they'd hold a bird bath, you know. odd what people put on their front lawns. I know a family of flamingos in Southern California that have a plastic Italian in their front yard. Well, as I say, he was almost, that's been against the law for years. You know, child taxidermy has been against the laws. But there's still these outlaw child taxidermists that are hanging out in the mesquite way out there. You see their trap lines out over the ridges, these old Salvation Army refrigerators. Well, he was almost captured by one of them, and I, instantly cognizant of the trauma that had interrupted his brief career on the planet, sang him that very same sprightly rondelay, "You Are My Sunshine." Let's listen to it again, only this time, let's listen to it by George Gobel, who used to sing, and he used to sing old country music. This is George Gobel at Las Vegas, accompanied by a coloratura soprano, and "You Are My Sunshine."
You are my sunshine, my only sunshine. You make me happy when skies are gray. You'll never know, dear, how much I love you. Please don't take my sunshine away.
The other night, dear, as I lay sleeping, I dreamed that I...
I wish I'd had that to put my kid to bed with, I'll tell you. Yeah, living on the edge of the Uinta Basin there. There was a fellow out there by the name of Reliable Sespooch. He was a Ute Indian that was a part of the Sespooch clan. And he was the one who taught me one of those valuable hobo skills that I remember. And that was, he taught me how to lay down on my belly by the stream in a pool that was full of sunlight where the trout would come and bask. They would get kind of somnambulant. He taught me how to lie there real, real quiet and reach my hand slowly into the water and up under the trout and tickle it, kind of rub it under the chin till it was sort of hypnotized. And then you could, with a flip of the hand, bat it out onto the grass. Well, I did that. One day I went down there. I didn't want to catch the trout. I just wanted to see if it worked. Well, I tickled up this large trout, and I got up to leave, and I heard this bloom behind me, and that trout had jumped out on the bank behind me and was following me through the cheatgrass on its stubby little fins. Well, it was my constant companion for a number of weeks. So every place I went, you know, out to the sheep ranch, out to the chicken house, it was with me. Well, I was crossing the old river bridge there, the old Slatwood River Bridge. My trout was behind me, slipped between the cracks of the bridge and fell into the water and drowned. Well, that's hard to believe. I know you don't believe that. You can tell me, why don't you go wash an elephant, Utah? Well, that's what you're going to hear right now. Baby Gramps is going to go wash an elephant.
This one's called Go Wash an Elephant If You Want to Do Something Big.
An elephant if you want to do something big. Scrub him, rub him till he squeals like a pig. Dip that brush down in that pail, make that water fly. Wash him in September, by April he beware, you can drown in an elephant's dimples. They're much deeper than Shirley Temple's. Go wash an elephant if you wanna do something big. Go out and find an elephant, white, gray, or pinkly. Wash him all over till he's nice and wrinkly. Go wash an elephant if you wanna do something big. Your part.
Let's see if we got it. Oh, that's really good. Little jazz.
Go wash an elephant if you wanna do something big. But beware, you can drown in an elephant's dimples. They're much deeper than Shirley Temples. I go wash an elephant if you wanna do something big.
Baby Grants, Baby Grants from up there in Seattle. Isn't that absolutely wonderful? I love finding these things and having these friends that do this music. I would be a happy man if I could just stay home, if I could afford to stay home and just do this radio show and push things out on the people's airwaves that never have a chance of hearing anyplace else, except on community radio. Well, it's time for us to get out of here. You know, I was running a little bit late. You've been sitting there, hopefully, listening to this palaver. It's your time to get up and shake a leg. I like to throw in a dance tune every now and then so that you can grab your partner, grab a kid, grab a dog, grab a cat, and whirl around your kitchen, whirl around your patio, whatever you happen to be doing. Stop and lift a leg and dance. You're going to listen to Charlie Blacklock once again, the great musical saw player up in his 80s and his band. They're Charlie's band. We're going to dance out on Chicken Polka. Thank you. of you at the chicken polka there. I hope, hopefully your bodies are drenched with sweat. This is UU Todd Phillips, the golden voice of the Great Southwest, and this is in fact then Loafer's Glory, the hobo jungle of the mind. We'll send this one out for George W. This is from Ogden Nash. Nobody minds dust storms in Lubbock. They don't create havoc, just hubbubbock. But I'm so full of holy Texas, I'll be hallowed ground when they annex us.